Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Rivers Casino Sportsbook, where the Steelers right now, thank you, are a 6.5-point underdog against the Chargers. Third time this year they've been a 6.5-point underdog. Do you know what their record is in the previous two games? Outright as a 6.5-point underdog.
I think it has to be 2-0, or no, 1-1. They beat the Bills and they lost to the Packers.
Well done, Melzy. You caught yourself.
Yeah, but I almost
think it was
put
because
the Browns
I started
in there.
Shaking my head no, and you.
No. I was tempted to say the Browns, and then I thought, no, wait, that wasn't it.
All right, so I saw this story today, and I wanted to get your take and have our listeners take it in and tell me what their read or what their reaction is to it. Sports Business Journal posts local television ratings for every NFL team at the halfway point. Steelers have played 9 games. There's 8 left.
Close enough.
We have an odd number situation now.
I tell you what, they're going to go 8-8-1 so they don't have a losing season. But yes.
So we got a half season's worth of TV ratings. Yep. And this is not like nationally, like what the Steelers rating is in Los Angeles or what it is in Dallas. This is not like for their games in encompassing all of the USA. This is just how many people in Pittsburgh are watching Steelers games when they're played, okay?
Yes.
They still have overall one of the highest ratings in the entire NFL. So I'm looking at the chart right now. The only teams that I see that are producing a higher rating in their respective cities are the Bills in Buffalo, the Packers, the Saints,
all
the Chiefs.
Predictable outcomes so far.
Yeah, there's like four
haven't
or five.
Haven't heard one that doesn't make sense to me being that high up.
The Browns, so
yeah,
five
same
or six,
thing.
Right?
Yep.
But here's the interesting thing. There are only a handful of teams this season that have seen a ratings decrease, which, if you think about it, most NFL ratings should go up. If not, all NFL ratings should go up because there was a presidential election last year and there was the COVID situation that was still pre-vaccine a much bigger deal than it is
and
now,
it was
right?
Correct.
So you had two huge 24/7 news events that were going on in the middle of playing an NFL season that frankly felt weird because it was in sterile environments without fans and people had other things they were worried about, right?
Correct. All correct.
That all being said, more people were watching the Steelers in 2020 than they are in 2021.
Before I opine, can I please have some of the other teams that suffered a decrease in their ratings? Can I know some of the others?
The Falcons.
Okay.
The Colts.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles.
Okay.
The Giants.
The Falcons. The Falcons are the team that makes sense there because I just do not feel like Atlanta is a great sports town. It's certainly more of a Georgia football town than
Plus, the Braves were in the World Series.
Braves in the World Series is another. Colts doesn't make a ton of sense to me, frankly.
I thought they were better last year with Rivers.
Yeah, but they're getting interesting again right now.
Yeah,
they look like they're starting to rise. Giants, I don't know. New York market's a huge market. They're not very good. The Eagles is, again, explained probably more by the fact that they've been pretty disappointing, although, like the Colts, they're starting to kind of get it together.
Okay. So
the only thing I can come up with here, my initial thought is, one, that's genuinely strange.
Well, before we get to the Steelers part, I want to just tell you where they rank in terms of
total viewership.
A ratings decrease.
Right? Okay.
The biggest decrease in the NFL is the Texans this year. They've lost almost a quarter of their audience. They've gone from Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt to
complete mess.
Davis Mills and a bunch of garbage.
Jonathan Greener.
One win. Yeah, they won week one. They haven't won since.
Okay, makes sense.
So they are dead last. They're 32nd. The Steelers are 29th. Pittsburgh, the fourth biggest ratings decrease in the NFL this year, is Pittsburgh watching the Steelers. The only teams that have suffered a larger loss of audience, Houston, Chicago, Seattle. That's it.
Chicago is confounding there.
Yeah, because they've got Fields now.
That's like the most excited I've seen people in that town who I follow on Twitter be in a long time.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to
me. I can't answer for
that. Cubs are a horrible team.
Seahawks make sense because Russell Wilson isn't
playing.
White Sox
being
good. You got Geno Smith games in there. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, but that's like, that seems, again, to be
a minor.
What
do you think? What explains the Steelers being a team in this city where fewer people are watching them than last year? Is it just strictly because they were undefeated and they were rolling last year?
I think that you say the COVID thing maybe cut into the ratings last year, but I could also argue with you that people looking for a distraction were seeking out sports even more, or maybe here they're undefeated. People just didn't want to watch COVID coverage. They said, give me the Steelers, give me my escape. I guess I have to contribute, or I have to attribute it somewhat to the following two factors. I call this one Atlanta Braves syndrome, where the team is so regularly competitive that fans can see that they're sort of at the end of their run and they're just starting to check out mentally. There's a fatigue factor from how ugly last season ended and how few radical changes the roster underwent, right? I think if they like make a move up, for example, and go get Justin Fields, I actually think there would be more excitement here. People would feel like it would be the turning of kind of a new page to a new chapter. So that's one part of it. There's just a fatigue factor. Man, this is going to be, Chris, you've twisted it once again into your favorite hobby horse. I just wonder how many people, given how we hear people now talk about Ben versus than they ever did before, if there's a specific Ben fatigue, like I'm just going to watch the same old if he's still the quarterback, why am I going to subject myself to that? That's part of how I feel. Like, I could understand if you went into this season watching how last season played out for the last 6 weeks, including the playoffs, and you see him coming back. Maybe you see Tomlin back and you're frustrated by that if you're a Steelers fan, all these other things. And you say, why am I going to subject myself to this again?
And then they got off to a bad start. They beat the Bills, which was huge, but then they lost their next three games.
It looked like the wheels really were falling off for them. So that's the best explainer I can give you. Because otherwise it doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
I don't think it's like another example of you just trying to find like an anti-Ben slant to things. I don't think that Roethlisberger gets treated or revered, even though everyone will say he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. You even don't deny that he'll end up in Canton one day, and he's a two-time Super Bowl champion, and the only guy who has that next to his name who isn't in the Hall of Fame is Jim Plunkett, and he's never had a losing season and all that stuff. But even with the acknowledgement that this is probably his final go-round and his last hurrah, I just don't get the sense that Steelers fans are, like, cherishing that and embracing that the way that other teams maybe have with franchise quarterbacks or great quarterbacks who were at the end. Because I think it's probably like he hung on a year too long.
Well, there's also been so much ambiguity. Is he finally done? Is he a little bit of the boy cried wolf? He wanted Todd Haley gone. No one really took that retirement threat seriously except the Steelers, who drafted Mason Rudolph as a result, maybe. But, I mean, he's said before, I take it year to year, and I think there's a fatigue factor there. When you have at least in the back of your mind, is this going to be the year he says, I take it year to year, and then he's actually done? I think that kind of wears off.
I think this proves to me that there are a lot more realist Steelers fans out there than I thought. That don't just drink Kool-Aid and have, like, pie in the sky. What's wrong? You all right?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Starting to lead in there.
No.
Like, you had just received
a
bit of breaking news,
no.
And I'm like, is Chris going to tell me something right now?
No, I'll tell you
right
something
now
during the break, though, that's going to make you chuckle, but that's it. Keep going. Yeah, pie in the sky. Let's go.
I got nervous that there was literally breaking news that was happening, and I was dropping the ball like I did the other day when the Penguin story broke.
No, I can understand
how you
feel.
Tell me about it during the break.
This time, I would rather cut in. I would just cut in on you. I would not let you flounder like that.
Okay.
No. Okay. So pie in the sky. Let's
I just think that Steelers fans went into this season with eyes wide open, knowing that the ceiling for the team was probably sneak into the playoffs, lose a playoff game, and that's it. And I think your whole, maybe spoiled is the wrong word, but when that is like the high watermark for a Steelers projection, that's like looked at as the best they can do. I just don't think that there's a lot of interest. And that it would be different if, like,
what team in the AFC North, to just build off of this point, what team had the least juice coming into this year? I'd argue it's the Steelers. In terms of the excitement being generated, let me explain why. Browns are thinking at the beginning of the season, preseason, we just won 11 games. Like, if we make a couple more plays, we beat the Chiefs and play for the AFC title, right? We're a rising group. Bengals have, now they didn't know he would become this right away, but they get Ja'Marr Chase. That's an exciting first-round pick. And there's the knowledge that Joe Burrow, last year's number one pick's coming
Bengals
back.
Ratings are actually down this year, too.
Which is surprising to me. I don't understand that. Ravens, though, you know, hey, we're the Baltimore Ravens. We have a guy who's won the MVP. There's a little fatigue there, but there's still a carrot dangling out in front of the Lamar Jackson Ravens. Show you can make it to a Super Bowl and win one. The Steelers, by as far as storylines, very specifically and narrowly here, by far the least juice of any team in the division. It would make sense to me that they would engender the least fresh excitement, the kind that gets you to plant your ass in front of the TV for 3 hours reliably every week relative to their peers in the division at the very least.
I think it's when you're coming out of an era and you're winding it down and like the playoffs, yeah, you're probably still kind of an average team, and teams that go 8-8 or 9-7 in the old 16-game schedule make the playoffs all the time. Like, yeah, the Steelers can get there, but when that's the best you can do and it's 18 years with a quarterback and 15 years with a coach, it's just stale. It's old. You know, it's flipped if you're a team like, say, now I know we're not even close to this yet, but if you went into the season saying, you know, I think the Pirates can finish in second place and get a wild card game or something, like that would be new again. Like that would be a fresh new.
Sure.
Like I would think, and I don't have the data in front of me, but I would assume that, now I know their games sometimes end up on channels that not a lot of people get, but I would think when Pitt football has been on ABC or ESPN this year, their ratings relative to years past, that this year they've been much better. Because with the Pickett component, you're a ranked team with a Heisman Trophy candidate player, and it's at the most glamour position. But I think you get more of your casual fans
also,
to tune
yeah.
in and watch that. Because you haven't seen that
well, it's also
in 35, 40
It's also
years.
At a position where you have been searching for an answer for so long since Marino. You finally have the guy who's the best player in the field in most games. What are the Jaguars' ratings, if you don't mind me asking? Just to see if I can support this point at all.
Jacksonville is a little bit better. The biggest jump this year in the NFL is the Chargers.
Which I guess, well, that one's a little surprising to me. Do you know why? Because I just think they are such a non-entity
well, Chris,
in that
the
city.
Ratings overall are not good, but they've made an incremental gain.
Give
so
me
it is,
who's the best combination, just as quickly as you can look. I don't need a
the
D
Cowboys
analysis.
Have a 20% gain this year.
Of a team that's always popular and always on the rise?
Yep.
Makes sense. Why? You knew Dak was coming back.
Bills, 20%
new,
rise.
Still have Bills are probably the single best example, unfinished business.
Patriots, big jump.
Mac Jones.
Not Cam Newton.
And the intrigue of knowing one of those games was going to be like the NFL storyline game of the year.
Rams, big jump.
What are the Buccaneers?
Bucks are basically flat. They're the same as last year.
Interesting. I don't know. I can't come back to anything other than a bit of that fatigue and a diminished expectation. I've heard, to support what I'm saying here, I have heard more like resignation. When I talk to people about the Steelers, when you get tweets, even from people that disagree with you, if you occasionally go back and forth and engage, there is more overall resignation about the team's long, like its overall capability of this year and capacity to go deep into the playoffs than I've ever heard in my life covering them. I've never gone into a season where I felt like my sort of cynical opinion on the team or skeptical opinion was more widely shared than before this year. And I think about what we get at Heinz Field. They're announcing attendances of like barely 60,000. I don't think it's that much of a folly to conclude that Steelers fans are also occasionally tuning out some too.
Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst, Pro Football Focus, with us. We didn't have Bruce Gradkowski today because he's sitting through his kids' parent-teacher conferences.
Oh. Man, you know what sucked about those for me growing up, especially in 7th and 8th grade?
Your mom was the teacher, so your dad met with your mom?
My dad and mom just basically sat me down around the kitchen table those 2 days, and my mom would be like, well, you got a C in religion class, in my religion class, because you fell asleep all the time. My dad would say, why are you falling asleep in your mother's class?
Oh, no.
And it was every bit as awkward as I am making it out to be.
Steve, does that sound like fun to you?
No, not at all. Although, yeah, parents teach be similar in my house over here, the kids. So we'll see how those go as they get older.
I literally got the worst grades in grade school of my grade school life. I was like a straight A. I was a straight A kid, and my mom was the only teacher that ever gave me C's, and she gave me several of them. That
Jeez.
Hurts, man.
Wow.
I feel like there is
That's
some
like
sort
reverse
of
nepotism.
Yeah, there's some sort of psychological thing in there. She was so worried about charges of nepotism. She was like, "Oh no, you're getting graded on the harshest curve of all time."
Sometimes we've wondered out loud, Steve, if Mason Rudolph has pictures of someone over at the Steelers to warrant him still being on the team and being the team's backup and possibly being their starting quarterback in the future. So what did you see from him against the Lions? A lot of bad football?
Some good in there, too. He had a couple nice – his best throws fell incomplete, so they didn't count. But, yeah, it wasn't great overall. It was a lot of what we've seen from Mason Rudolph to this point. He's a backup. It's a decent backup, right? He could have done better.
I mean, you're talking to a show that isn't exactly the Mason Rudolph fan club here. How negative of a grade? I'm curious as to get into the secret sauce a little bit here, into the weeds. When he makes that failed throw to Ray McCloud, who's open in the end zone, and the ball
one-hops
him, how negatively is that play graded? Like, is there a way to make it that extra harsh because of where it happened on the field and the stakes involved in that specific play where it literally takes 4 points off the board?
No, you just kind of describe it like that. Generally, a miss is just a miss, and they'll all be on a similar scale no matter how bad it looks or maybe how impactful it is. It's just you obviously left an important play on the table. So usually the harsher grades are the ones where you put the ball in harm's way, have a turnover opportunity, or put a turnover-worthy play in the end zone or something like that will be graded a little bit worse. But generally a miss is a miss. It's just
Interesting. That's interesting, though, that you say that to me. And I'm saying this out of curiosity and not really in a challenging way, so I don't want you to take it that way. But, like, to me, a miss in the end zone, if a turnover in the end zone is very harshly graded, I would think, like, a fairly blatant miss in the end zone would be, too, just because of, again, place on the field.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the way I like to look at our grading system is it's how well does a guy play. And the value component kind of comes out of it naturally, but we're not inherently looking for value, right? So if a guy just one-hops a slant, say, whether it happens at the 10-yard line or in the end zone or one-hops whatever, where it happens in our sense of how well you play the game, it doesn't matter. But from a value standpoint, generally, the guys who play better in our system are more valuable. But there are times where maybe the value component gets lost because we're not looking for it, so to speak. The reason why an interception in the red zone or a turnover-worthy play in the red zone might be worse is because it is inherently a worse play, because part of the decision-making is a part of that play. It's a part of playing well, and you made a bad decision at a time where, okay, it's better to say throw it away or whatever it might be, if that all makes sense. So we're not looking for value inherently. We're looking for how well a guy played football first.
Steve, how would Mason Rudolph's game against the Lions, it does, how would Mason Rudolph's game against the Lions compare to Ben Roethlisberger's performance on the year? Like, was his grade in that game right in line with Ben's grades? for the season, or was there a big drop off from Roethlisberger in 2021 to Mason Rudolph for that one start?
We actually have. I think it's actually kind of similar. Again, it depends on how you want to. Rudolph's two best throws ended up becoming incomplete. Those helped his grade quite a bit, but overall, it was. I thought it was similar. I mean, I think what Ben has done now, where I think Big Ben has been good, is he got a few of those clutch moments here and there, and I still feel better about him making those throws than say Mason Rudolph. But I think throw for throw, it was actually similar to Big Ben. But what Rudolph didn't have was his passes going to his teammate, to his own team. You know, instead they fell incomplete or whatever it might have been. So that's where Big Ben kind of benefited a little bit, I think, from the playmakers and a little bit of luck this year.
Are all throw, like, I was reminded of an old NFL film Steve Sable video where he basically did a 13-minute profile post-career of Bernie Kosar, and the thrust of it was essentially Bernie Kosar has a really ugly motion and throws a really ugly ball, but by golly, he gets the job done. And it was all sort of like tongue-in-cheek and chuckling. Mason Rudolph, even some of the throws that were complete, Steve, were not exactly zipped in there. They were like deep outs that were maybe floated in that just got in a little pocket. Do you guys ding a passer or maybe have a bias in the grading for somebody who's got the arm talent to make throws, I guess, that look more impressive, for lack of a better word? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't inspire confidence in me as a viewer watching Mason Rudolph throwing balloon passes out there, even if they end up being complete.
No, so I think, again, I feel like from a grading standpoint, that comes out in the wash. I think what you're describing is where I had a ton of issue with Mason Rudolph coming out. There were times where, you know, you see this big, you know, 6'4", 6'5", dude who should be able to, like, zip it around the yard, and he doesn't, right? The ball just doesn't come out of his hand. Great, I'm flying through some of his plays right now. Quarter two, he puts a nice little touch on a deep out and puts it right there. I mean, he does have touch throws and all that stuff, but there's other times when he should be throwing a zip, a deep out, or a deep comeback, and it just doesn't get there. I think what we seem to see with those is if a guy doesn't have a great arm, he ends up making it like a bang-bang play at the catch point, you know, a pass breakup opportunity. And again, it usually leaves positives on the table, right? You just don't complete as many of those passes because you just don't get it there when you should. So I think Rudolph is lacking in just the pure velocity department. And every now and again at Oklahoma State, you kind of see it. But there was too many times when he should have been zipping it, and he didn't. And that was always a little concerning, you know, just the natural arm strength that he had.
We watched Kendrick Green in that game because of the rain. It was like Marquise Pouncey 2.0. Oh. The snaps were going over Rudolph's head. They were left. They were right. They were everywhere but where they should have been. I know how much you guys dislike Marquise Pouncey, so I'm curious where you guys are on the year for Kendrick Green and if the Steelers' decision to pass on another center who is now starting for the Kansas City Chiefs is something that you think will come back to bite them.
Can you take me higher with Creed? Creed Humphrey, the number one center in the NFL from a grading standpoint. So, Creed has been fantastic for the Kansas City Chiefs. Green's grading in the 50s, which, you know, isn't great. You know, he definitely had the snap issues the other day. He's been just okay across the board. I think if you look at it from a perspective of he's a rookie and we do see players, we do see offensive linemen get better. It's not an atrocious start for Green. But when you do compare it to what Creed Humphrey's doing with the Chiefs, he's been fantastic. I mean, the Chiefs, believe it or not, the Chiefs' strength is probably their offensive line and their run blocking in particular. That's not what you expect from a Chiefs offense. But, you know, with what Creed Humphrey's done and Trey Smith, you know, their rookie guard, they've really transformed that offensive line. So, yes, Humphrey's been fantastic. I don't think Green's been a disaster, but, you know, he's just been okay. And, you know, again, kind of expected for most rookies.
If you were going to rank the inherent value of these three positions, or I guess these three players project their value, Humphrey, Freiermuth, Najee Harris, who has like the greatest long-term value as an NFL player? A good center, good tight end, good running back, if we just assume they're all going to be good players.
I think the good tight end has the most. If you know you have a good tight end, I think that's the most valuable player because of what he brings, you know, especially a Freiermuth, what he brings in the pass game, what he brings as a run blocker. Center's actually probably pretty close to running back, believe it or not. You know, we always talk about running back as this interchangeable position, but if you have a good running back, there is value there. Part of the reason why we would avoid drafting running backs high or paying running backs is it's tough to predict who the best running backs are going to be, or it's to, or you can find a good running back in other places, right? So, but if you know you have a good running back and you know a guy like Najee is going to maximize what the run blocking brings and maximize what he can do as a receiver after the catch, Najee's probably a little bit more valuable than your starting center, which I would say is. And then the trouble with center is all the stuff that we were assured that Pouncey was great at is the stuff that we can't necessarily grade, which is setting protections and all that stuff. So it is sometimes tough to assess what a center brings just beyond the blocking portion of his job. So I'd say running back and center might be close.
PFF Steve on Twitter, Steve Palazzolo. He's the best. He's the man with us every Thursday at 4:25. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, guys. Any inflammatory tweets today? What do we have? Anything?
I did put out the one about Rudolph versus Ben. I think people might actually like that because there's a lot of Mason Rudolph apologists out there, believe it or not.
Yeah. No, I think today's pretty light, though, on the getting you in trouble on social media, by and large.
Great. Great. It's always just a beautiful pastime every Thursday afternoon. Thank you, guys.
Next week we'll do heavy Minka, and we'll make up for that.
Yeah, we'll go in-depth on Minka's grade next week for all your fans.
Thank you. Steve Palazzolo.
Hi, Steve.
How about this Antonio Brown story that broke in the middle of that? Are you seeing this?
No, for once I'm way behind.
Exclusive to the Tampa Bay Times, Antonio Brown obtained a fake COVID-19 vaccination card to avoid NFL protocols, according to his former live-in chef. The issue here is the chef apparently wasn't paid.
There's a surprise.
So Antonio Brown owed him around $10,000, and he went to the Tampa Bay Times and has copies of texts from Antonio Brown's girlfriend to this chef and others saying, hey, Antonio Brown's willing to pay X amount of dollars for a fake Johnson & Johnson vaccination card. So
it's like an Antonio Brown Mad Libs, him doing something insanely unnecessary, right? His chef being involved, because I feel like there was always a chef at the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the...
Or like a personal trainer or somebody.
Somebody whose job it is to help Antonio Brown get the most out of his body, right? Either by fueling it with the right nutrition or working him out a certain way. And that person not being paid by Antonio Brown. Wonderful. Just wonderful. You think Touchdown Tom wants to put up with this any longer? You think he smooths this over? Finds $10,000 in the couch cushions to make the chef go away?
Tampa Bay Times, days before training camp, this chef says Tom Brady's longtime trainer and business partner, Alex Guerrero, photographed Brown's card for the Bucks. But now the chef is saying that Guerrero had no idea it was a fake. So Brady's not in on the...
Or Guerrero might have known, and Brady got to the chef and said, fear of God in you if you implicate my guy in any way, shape, or form as being privy to this.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm pretty sure Antonio Brown's on a zero-tolerance policy with the Bucks, and I would not be shocked if this is true, if they just cut him. All right, Andre Barnaby's here from the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. That's where we're broadcasting from today. You heard about this William Hill Sportsbook story?
I didn't hear a story, but we know a lot about William Hill.
What's going on with them?
What happened now?
They took a $30,000 bet before the baseball season started on Shohei Ohtani to win the American League MVP award.
At?
Well, it pays out $900,000.
Ooh.
So I guess that was the biggest bet they got on it, but there's a report today that Ohtani is going to win it tonight, that they're going to lose seven figures on this prop. It's their biggest, like, prop loss that they've ever suffered.
Let's start going by Bill Hill.
That's a huge. That's, I mean, $30,000 on a prop bet, that's a pretty steep
wager
to take.
But you take a $30,000 prop bet here, right? How would that work? Would you have to call it in first? Or?
You know what? There's not many prop bets that we're probably going to take at that value.
Okay.
But we're going to take a lot
especially those long. Yeah. Well, would the long odds make you more likely or less likely to take it?
It's just a lot of the prop bets, I mean, you're really not in the market of tens of thousands of dollars, right? I mean, for this reason.
Your exposure is so high.
Right, but at the end of the day, we would take a significant amount more on a straight-up bet on an NFL or spread bet or those types of things. But that's going to be interesting for those guys.
I always wonder what it would be like to be one of the people. Granted, if you got 30 grand to put on a prop, you probably have the money. It's just fun.
Oh, yeah.
But I imagine, what's it like to be an average Joe who's like, you know what? This is my big ticket. I'm going to put 30 grand on Shohei Ohtani to be the AL MVP, and then to watch that situation unfold. I'd be on pins and needles the whole year.
Yeah, but by the halfway point, he was like a lock to win.
Imagine how stressed you'd be about an injury at that point.
Oh, I know.
I would just be sweating every single day.
But you see that in different avenues. I mean, even here, we had a gentleman last week. I think it was a 7-team parlay. Hit for put $5 on it. I mean, he walked out of here with a decent chunk of change. You know, for a $5 bet, I'd take that all day. And it's probably the same. This guy's 30 grand is like this guy's $5.
Right.
You know me, I'm in the $5 category.
Are you guys – so when you said you're more likely to take a bet like that on a game like the Falcons and Patriots tonight or the Steelers and Chargers on Sunday than one of these?
Oh, yeah.
Does that go for, like, futures bets too, like on Super Bowl futures and stuff like that?
Win totals?
Yeah. Those are a little bit more realistic. Right, so Super Bowl future NFL winner, that kind of thing. You know, we're looking a little bit larger dollar in that bucket.
Okay,
for sure.
What do you guys got going on this weekend?
So, I mean, this weekend we got a, you know, it's going to be a great weekend in Pittsburgh. You've got the Pitt game at 3:30. You know, of course, no better place to watch it than here.
Agreed.
Fantastic to see Pitt doing as well as they are. It definitely translates over to some good action here at the, in the book
and the parking.
And the parking, of course, free for you, of course.
Thank you, Andre.
Congratulations, Pony, on all of your success.
Yes, yes.
No, but it's a good idea to park down here and walk over. I'm not just tooting my own horn.
It absolutely is. I mean,
the weather's going to be a little rugged that day, it looks like.
And you got
it's football weather.
It's perfect for football season. We still got a couple boosts left for the game on Saturday. That, you know, that's a nice little spot to watch. NFL, you know, we got the late night game for the Steelers, so we're going to see a lot of action on other games. I think we had a $10,000 bet on the Chargers already. I think we most of the action so far has been on the Bills game.
Bills Colts.
Yeah, so it's shaping up to be a good weekend and light up night. Light up night in Pittsburgh. What better place to spend it than Rivers Casino?
What's a high profile team that bettors here just absolutely in the NFL avoid like the plague because they are untrustworthy?
Oh,
like a team like the Chiefs for a long time for how good they usually are. Weren't they on like a 1-12?
They've had a horrible run against the spread.
Like, I'm talking about a team that's usually a favorite that just people are like radioactive. They're like, oh, no.
Listen, as much as it pains me to say it, I don't know if it's the high-profile team, but, you know, every year, the last 2 years at least, we started off and we've talked about the Browns, right? We've talked about the Browns.
Why'd you look at me like this would be so painful for me?
Huh?
You're incriminating me.
And then?
Yeah, I know.
Down the slope,
they're a mess. They're a double-digit favorite again. Let's see if people have learned their lesson yet. I know we didn't in our picks this week.
I don't think so.
Andre, thanks for having us back here, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you, brother.
Thanks, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.